So this, I just wrote this down to remind you what we had yesterday. So an ontological model is for a situation like this, where you have some preparation and some measurement. You imagine that the system has some ontic state specified by lambda as an outcome, and the probability of getting a certain outcome given a certain measurement and a certain preparation is given by this expression. And we imagine that for a given preparation, there's a distribution over ontic states. One thing I didn't emphasize yesterday, but I think it was clear, is that this lambda, of course, can be any kind of variable. Here I'm just representing it along a single axis as if it were a real number, but it can be any kind of variable whatsoever. Okay, and I gave you the one definition, which is for a psi-complete model. The distribution is delta, is a delta function for each state. This is for the psi-complete case. So I'll continue. That's right. Your preparation doesn't fix all those degrees of freedom. So you imagine that just like in classical statistical theories, therefore you have a distribution over different values for those variables. Okay, so that's the model. And then what this equation means is really the only way in which these two things communicate is through these variables lambda. Okay, so next. Let's define psi ontic. So an ontological model is said to be psi ontic if for any pair of preparations, of pure preparations, call them P psi and P phi. We have, let me write it down as an equation. We have basically that the probability distributions are non-overlapping. So if we draw it on a graph, and the reason this is called psiontic is because if this is true for every pair of pure states, then you can look at the value of lambda and deduce what the wave function is. Since So if we could prove that ontological models for quantum theory had to be psiontic, then that would be quite a strong statement. It would be saying that the wave function was a real thing. And that is indeed the content of the PBR theorem. They make one additional assumption beyond the assumptions that are implicit in setting up this ontological model framework. And you'll discuss that in a separate lecture. So Matthew Pusey, who is the first author on the on this paper, who's a postdoc here now, will give the talk on this, the final lecture. Yeah.
What's your definition of pure preparations? Seems to me like you've had to take a qubit.
I don't understand. So I take a to take a qubit, and you prepare it in a pure state. So you have a device which, according to quantum theory, is preparing it in a pure state. Well, according to this ontological model framework, that could correspond to a distribution over some underlying hidden variables. So imagine that's one pure state for the qubit. If I have a different pure state, I could have a different distribution. And the point is that those distributions should be non-overlapping. Well, yeah, maybe this isn't sufficiently clear. So this is in a sense going beyond the standard quantum framework. So you can't deduce lambda from looking at the standard quantum framework. We just, we haven't said what lambda is, and you can put an interpretation on the standard quantum framework which makes psiontic. Yeah, maybe I feel like you're missing the point. So do you have a Yeah, so that's exactly an example. So in this case, we'd have this. So if it's psi complete, then it's certainly psiontic. And what you're doing in this case is you're saying that the wave function itself is the hidden variable, is the ontic state. And so different states, different pure states have different ontic states, which is a distinct thing, which is a different thing to do with, yeah, with measurement, probabilities and measurements and so on. Okay, good. Okay, yeah, so this theorem was proved just a few years ago, and many people say it's the most important theorem in quantum foundation since Bell's theorem, and I would tend to agree. So you'll learn more about that. There's one more definition in this Harrigan-Spekens paper. Let me. Which is psi supplemented. And so this is when you have, well, basically when it's not psi complete, but it is psiontic. This is where the ontic state is given by the state vector and some additional variables. So then you can think of a particular pure state as being a delta function with regard to this axis, and then having some distribution in the other axis. I'm trying to draw this. Hope that's clear. So it's sort of, with respect to this axis, it's a delta function, but with respect to this axis, it's got some distribution. And P of lambda is then just given by and the an example of this kind of model is the de Broglie-Bohm model, which I will be discussing today in detail. So now we can look at this classification of ontological models. And let me just, this is a diagram from the Harrigan-Speckens paper. So this is psi complete, this is psi supplemented. Oh, did I give the psi epistemic definition? I did not. So psi epistemic is just not psiontic. I need another box here. So what that means is that for some pairs of quantum states, you'll have overlapping distributions. What that means is that there are some ontic states here in the overlap which are consistent with more than one pure state.
Are psi supplemented states psi ontic?
Yes. Yeah, I think that's right. Yeah. And then there doesn't exist a map in the case of psi epistemic. That's right. And so actually, so this case of psi epistemic is very interesting because it's sort of, if you thought that quantum states were really just probability distributions, then it's exactly what you'd expect. Situations where two states have some of the same properties, then you might expect exactly that they correspond to overlapping distributions. Okay. Yeah, and so just to finish this. So these two are psiontic. And obviously that one is psi epistemic. So that's the classification. So this is a good classification to have if you're going to start looking at different interpretations of quantum theory. So what I'll do now is I'll go through the different interpretations. What I'm going to do first of all is I'll give you a flow chart for deciding which interpretation you want to go with. Just look at front. So I'm going to give you a bunch of boxes with questions in them. First question, is there real stuff? And do you believe in reality? Okay. No. So if you don't believe in reality, that's yes. Or reality, but not as we know it. Maybe this at the very least just simply means reality, but not in accordance with this Scientological model framework. The ontological model. So down here are things like the Copenhagen interpretation. People in that interpretation would usually insist that they do believe in reality, but it's difficult to pin down what they mean by reality. And it seems like it doesn't fit into this ontological model framework at the very least. And also the sort of most developed modern version of that is the cubism framework due to Chris Fuchs and his collaborators. Cubism stands for quantum Bayesianism. Okay. Now, see if I can make these blackboards do what I want them to do. So then the next question you ask is the wave function real? Is there something out there in reality corresponding to the quantum state? If the answer is no, then the sort of interpretation you want is a psi epistemic model. And no sort of natural psi epistemic model has been developed. However, there are some very contrived models that prove at least that these things can exist. So the next question is psi complete? And if no, then what you want is a psi supplemented model. And the best developed version of such a thing is the thing I'll be talking about today, is the de Broglie-Bohm model. Okay. Now for another blackboard challenge. Yes. That's exactly what I wanted to happen. If psi is complete, well, then you're saying that the wave function is the only thing. The only real thing in the world is the wave function. So there's one further question. Is there collapse? Does the wave function collapse? If no, then you're in Emanuel's interpretation. If yes, then you're in the territory of collapse models. So I'm going to go through these three models, since they're all fairly well worked out. The de Broglie-Bohm model, many worlds, and collapse. And I'll give you an example of a collapse model. So the first thing I'll go through is the de Broglie-Bohm model. Before I go on to that, let's just ask a few questions, sort of things we're looking out for in interpretations. First question is, how does the interpretation solve the measurement problem? Or the reality problem? Second question, is the interpretation non-local, as Bell's theorem suggests? Give you the answer to this question. The de Broglie-Bohm model is explicitly non-local. And in fact, actually, it was the de Broglie-Bohm model that inspired John Bell to come up with his theorem. The many worlds interpretation, it's a more interesting situation. Many people who are advocates of this point of view think that it's a local interpretation. And the reason there is that it violates an assumption in the derivation of Bell's theorem, which is that you have definite outcomes. In the many worlds interpretation, everything happens. And so not clear that it fits into the model that Bell was using. And collapse models are non-local, because the wave function collapses non-locally. Another question you can ask is the interpretation a good departure point to move beyond quantum theory, say, to solve the problem of quantum gravity? I think this is an important point that, I mean, it doesn't have to be quantum gravity, whatever physics comes afterwards, that if your interpretation does nothing more than make you happy about the state of reality in quantum physics, then it's not doing enough, and that really a good approach to this problem ought to be doing something in addition, helping us move to the next physical theory. I should say, just in the interests of full disclosure, my personal opinion is that probably quantum theory is an effective theory. It's an approximation to some deeper theory, such as a theory of quantum gravity. And if that's the case, it may be that finding a good interpretation of quantum theory is really just an academic exercise. Just like if you'd found a good interpretation of, say, you know, Newtonian gravity, the non-locality implicit in Newtonian gravity bothered people a lot at the time. That might have just been an academic exercise, since, after all, Newtonian gravity isn't the correct theory. So you're not saying anything about reality. My feeling is that really, to make progress on this, we have to find new physics. But still, it's also very interesting to look at these different interpretations and see what they teach us. I've learned a lot from thinking about each of them. Certainly the de Broglie-Bohm model, which I'm about to treat, can tell you a lot about the nature of quantum theory. For example, it inspired Bell's theorem. I think it also inspired the PBR theorem, because in the de Broglie-Bohm model, the wave function is a real thing. It's a psi. It's a psi complete. Sorry, it's a psi. It's a psi ontic model. Okay. So let's move on to the de Broglie-Bohm model. Any questions before I move on to the next topic? Yeah.
You said you're going to discuss the three interpretations in the bottom there.
That's right.
Are we not going to talk about the top ones?
I'm not going to talk about Copenhagen. The honest truth is, I find it difficult to say anything very clear about the Copenhagen interpretation. I think everyone who attempts to say anything about it says something different, and so I don't want to contribute to that variety. But if you're interested in it, I suggest you read. Well, there's the response of Niels Bohr to the EPR paper. That's a place you could look at, try to understand what is going on. So cubism is very interesting, but I just don't have time to cover all those things. Yeah. And psi epistemic models, there's some interesting stuff happening there, which, I mean, in principle I'd like to discuss, but I don't have time. Yeah, but there's no sort of fully worked out model that kind of feels natural, whereas these models all have a sort of more of a natural flavor. Yeah.
Just in terms of like seeing a departure point for quantum gravity or something like that.
Yeah.
In some way, there's like a difference between this and, I guess, Newtonian gravity, in the sense that like we don't have any experiments. Quantum theory predicts the wrong results. So in Newtonian gravity, you get stuff like the area that emerges.
Well, here's an experiment it doesn't predict. Quantum theory doesn't predict the perihelion of Mercury, for example.
I guess it's out of its range.
But that's the whole point. Physics should be a unified subject. And people might have claimed, well, you know, really, you know, that Mercury, well, I suppose not. I mean, clearly that was a mistake of Newtonian physics. There's nothing that you can point to that is so clearly a mistake, because everything like that is out of its range. But we're looking for a theory that can cover every kind of physical phenomenon.
I guess kind of like, just the looking for, you know, is this a good deposit for example, what can we kind of be, so I mean, if I was looking to say general relativity, expecting it to say, reproduce Newtonian gravity in the low,
Yeah.
low energy limit of some
Yeah.
sense. And the same thing with classical mechanics, like a quantum mechanics. But
Yeah.
it seems like what we'd be looking for, like a different kind of
Yeah.
reproduction, some limit that's
Right,
something
yeah.
that looks like it almost exactly in all the systems you're looking at. So
Yeah.
what kind of give?
So, I mean, I have a lot to say about this because it's the kind of stuff I'm thinking about nowadays. But I'm also aware that I've got 25 minutes to cover you to cover. So maybe, but I think somewhere later I'm going to talk about it. I'm not sure how much time I'll have to go into detail. Yeah, but also we can talk offline about it. Yeah, great. I mean, it's a big subject, obviously. Okay. So we're going to just take the case of non-relativistic quantum theory. Even quantum mechanics, because I'm thinking about particles. A wave function for n particles. We're going to take these particles to be distinguishable, so we're not going to worry about any identical particle issues. And this wave function evolves according to the Schrodinger equation, of course. Which is not something I write down very often in my own line of research. And each of these is a position, each of these vectors is a position in three space. Okay. So here's the de Broglie-Bohm model. Now the ontic state is specified by this, the wave function this is the ontic state at a given time. And it's also specified by a bunch of positions of the particles. So I'm using small x to denote the argument of this function, and large x to denote the actual positions of the particles. So the key thing here is that we're assuming in the de Broglie-Bohm model, you assume that there are actual particles that have actual positions. This is not something you assume in standard quantum theory. to put. So I'm going to write just going to write x to denote the position in configuration space of these arguments. And this is the position of the system, the actual particles in configuration space. So this is the ontic state. Is that clear? Any questions? Everyone understands the radical innovation is that you actually have positions for the particles.
So the small x are positions of what?
So these small x's are the variables you use in defining the function. Because you need to talk about a function. We're saying this function is a real thing. So they're the sort of, they're the things that you use to define a function. The big ones are the actual positions. It's a different concept. Yeah?
So you could have like a wave function with the delta spike at x1 equals x2 equals everything else equals 0. And then you could have all of your big x's being like 1 meter to the right.
So you can certainly consider that. I mean, it would the equations of the De Broglie model would not like that. But yes, you can do it. And let's see what fun and choose. Yeah, that's a good way to make the point that they're conceptually distinct things.
And the positions aren't determined, by the way. I mean, they might.
Yeah, so I'll give you now the equations for the. Okay. Yeah, so that's the ontic state. And now we also need to say how this ontic state changes in time. So the dynamics. One, the Schrodinger equation. I wrote down above. That tells you how the wave function part of the ontic state evolves. Two, this is an equation for the positions of the particles. So the velocity of the nth particle is given by calculating this function of the wave function and then evaluating it at the position of the system in configuration space. Note that this is, you have to provide a position for each of the particles, not just the particle whose velocity you're trying to calculate. This is called the guidance equation in the literature nowadays. So those are the postulates of this De Broglie-Bohm model. Sometimes an additional assumption is added. And this is the assumption that at time t equals zero, the density, the probability density, which we'll denote by rho, so the probability density at that time is given by the square of the wave function evaluated at these big X's. The modulus, the square of the modulus. Oh, there's a missing bracket. So, so sometimes this is added as an assumption. Sometimes it's not, and then an attempt is made to justify that after a fairly short time, this will come to be true anyway. If you make this assumption, then these two equations, the Schrodinger equation and the guidance equation, imply that for all later times, this will be true. And actually also all earlier times, if you want. So this is a strong statement. In a sense, what you could say is that we've chosen this guidance equation in just such a way to make this true.
Maybe you said and I missed it, but rho here is like we're thinking of a classical probability density.
It's a probability density, yeah, over this positions in configuration space, yeah. So, if you have just one particle in one dimension, so then you'll have x, and then it'll just be some distribution like this. This will be your row. Yeah. If you have more particles, it's a function on the configuration space, and it has to integrate to one and so on, just like a probability distribution. Yeah, exactly. So if you start a bunch of particles at some positions and then let them evolve, then you'll determine the evolution of this density. And the thing you want to prove is that that's the same. That's also given by the evolution of this psi squared, where psi squared is evolving by the Schrodinger equation. Well, maybe I'm going to give some motivation for this next. I'm not sure this is what you're looking for, but maybe you can hold off on that question until I've done that. Okay. Let's just erase here. So, this is a way to motivate this. So, note that this quantity is the probability, is the quantum probability current. You'll find this in just standard textbooks on quantum theory that don't mention the De Broglie-Bohm model anywhere. Satisfies this equation. So this says this equation is satisfied. So put psi squared equal to rho, and j equal to rho times v, where v is equal to that. So this is our guidance formula over there. Well, this is going to give us our guidance formula from over there. Oops. Let me get that. And this is just the classical continuity equation that you'll be familiar with from fluid dynamics. And so this equation here is equivalent to the guidance equation over there, if you interpret it appropriately. So this motivates that this is what you'd expect to be true. That everything works out, and it kind of comes from this quantum probability current up there. Okay, so I have a few minutes left, and what I want to do now is to show you how to sketch some trajectories in the De Broglie-Bohm model. I found this kind of thing quite useful. It gives you a good intuition as to what the De Broglie-Bohm model says for different quantum phenomena. And that can often teach you something about quantum theory in more general terms. Let's see. There we go. Hold the middle. Okay, I'll use the back. So this is how to sketch trajectories. I mean, the only real way to get trajectories is to put this stuff into a computer and make it plot them. And you can do that, but often you can just sketch them by the following kind of considerations. First, notice that the velocity in configuration space is a function for every given wave function of the position in the configuration space and time. So what that means is that if you have a given wave function, then if this is one trajectory, then this trajectory this trajectory isn't allowed, because at this point here the two trajectories would cross, but the velocity is a single valued function of the point in positions of the position in configuration space. This is the no crossing principle. It also shows you that the de Broglie model is kind of different from Newtonian physics, in the sense that it's really the position in configuration space that determines the dynamics, not the position in phase space for a given wave function. Mm-hmm.
You say that the velocity is a function of position and time, right?
That's right, yeah.
So presumably if I had one particle crossing through a position at a certain point in time and another particle at the same position later on.
Yeah.
Is there any smart way to represent that?
So I mean, that can happen, that the particles can pass through the same position, the same spatial position at different times from different velocities, because the wave function can evolve in a complicated way, and so it's not forbidden. They would cross the same spatial position. So you always, when you draw these trajectories, it's always good to have a time axis so you can use this no crossing principle. Otherwise, you can't, you fail to use it. Yeah, because this equation over here is the one I'm using. And psi depends on time. So but for a given time, this has a single value at a given point in the configuration space. And then the other thing that's helpful to draw trajectories is the fact that so if you assume that your initial distribution is equal to psi squared, then that will continue to be true. So let me just show you an example. So imagine you have some initial Gaussian at time t0, and I'm interested in evolving it to some later time t here. And it may have spread a little bit. Then here you can see that any trajectory that starts, so the trajectories can't cross, so you can't have this, because that involves trajectories crossing. Uh, Furthermore, the trajectories have to spread in such a way as to preserve the distribution. So what's going to happen is just simply that they'll behave like this, and they'll spread out slightly. So this is only giving you the qualitative features. The quantitative features, of course, requires a real calculation. But here's a real calculation. I'll just hand this around. Pass one to him. I may not have printed enough copies. Let me pass it back. If you don't get a copy, I'm sorry. So this is the de Broglie-Bohm model calculation for a double slit interferometer. And you can see, if you look at the piece of paper, what's happening is that the particle trajectories don't cross. They do kind of wiggle, and they have to wiggle because if you take a cross section through here, you've got to get the right distribution for an interference pattern. So there are dark and bright spots. And so these trajectories wiggle in just the right way to give you the correct interference pattern that you'd expect. And so they reproduce the predictions of quantum theory. Okay.
But at least the solutions of different particles at the same time.
Oh, yeah, good question. Yeah. So what's happened here is you do the calculation, you start the particle in one position, you revolve it through, you get a certain trajectory. Then you repeat the calculation for a different initial position, revolve it through. So this is giving you the same, so in any given run of the experiment, only one of these trajectories is going to be seen. But then if you keep repeating it, then you'll get this distribution. Yep.
Feels like if I was to start a particle, like a very well hidden, like a infinitesimal composition.
Right.
And I let the wave function evolve, mm-hmm.
Yeah.
In the center of the symmetrical potential, then the wave function kind of can collapse on either side and spread out.
That's right.
If the particle has a definite position, the symmetry will kind of prevent it from going either way. Is that a problem with the model, or is it just because it only happens if you have a particle like perfectly well defined?
Yeah, so you can imagine the particle exactly in the center, and these kinds of things are always, let's see. So if suddenly you can imagine a place where you could put a particle where the amplitude is zero,
yeah.
And then it would just sit there as long as the derivatives of the of the wave function are zero around about there as well. So that could happen. If you have a situation like this, we have a Gaussian. Well, in the position in the middle, you want it to sort of stay in the center pretty much as the thing evolves. You can, if you consider measure zero particle, putting particles where the wave function has measure zero, then you can get some weird effects. You can also get particles traveling very, very fast at the speed of light. Sorry, faster than the speed of light, because this is non-relativistic anyway, so there's no.
Sorry, but none of these predictions
have been able to come to. Yeah, it always works out. You always get the right predictions of quantum theory. Every now and then people claim to have. Counter example, but usually there's a mistake, or well, there's always been a mistake so far. Actually, one feature on this particular graph is interesting. As you can see, that the wiggles in the path trajectories don't start until the wave functions evolving from these two separate slits start to overlap. So you can see initially these wave functions are spreading out at a certain speed, and then they start to overlap, and that's when the wiggles hit in, and that's because the wiggles are really representing the quantum interference kicking in. Until the wiggles hit, you just have a sort of situation like this. Okay, I still have a fair amount to say about the de Broglie-Bohm model, but I think that's enough to cover the questions in the tutorial today. So I'll stop there.